Thanks, John. Well, as John was saying, this is the last in a short series of sermons where we've been doing something a little bit different from what we usually do when it comes to preaching and teaching in our services. Normally, we would just read a passage from the Bible and we'd just spend some time thinking that through. You know, what's going on in this passage? What does it mean? How do we make sense of that? How does that shape us and how we live our lives today as Christians? But over these last few weeks, what we've been doing is just stopping and reflecting a little bit on our experience and on our life together as a church. And as we bring that series to an end, there's a few things I want to say. Some loose ends, if you like, that it might be worth just taking a few minutes to tie up. There's an apocryphal story, at least I hope it's apocryphal, about a pastor who, I think he had some kind of, I think he flipped out a little bit, to be honest, as a pastor. Because one Sunday morning, apparently, what this guy did was he set the Sunday morning service up as a funeral service. So everyone came to church thinking they were just going to church, and they got there, and it was a funeral service, and there was a coffin laid out at the front of the church and everything. And partway through the service, this guy said, "Well, I suppose you're wondering, whose funeral is it? Who has died?" And he said, "Why don't you come up and take a look?" And the coffin was an open casket, and as everybody walked past, they looked into the coffin, and this guy had put a mirror at the bottom of the coffin. And his point, well, I think his point was fairly obvious in a way. And I want to say very, very clearly, this series has not been like that. Okay, this series where we're just stopping and reflecting a bit on where we are as a church, this has not been, in my head at least, this has not been the spiritual equivalent of being an accident and emergency, you know, where the defibrillator is out and it's like, we got to get a pulse on this thing. You know, that's not at all the atmosphere in which I have been sharing some thoughts and ideas and laying out some of the things I've been saying over the last few weeks. It is very far from the truth to say that at any level, MIE is flatlining. We know that, right? You know, we've been talking about evangelism. Are we doing evangelism as a church? Yeah. Are we seeing people becoming Christians in and through the life and the ministry of MIE? Yes. Yes, we are. And we want to give thanks and celebrate what God is doing. But are we satisfied? Could our experience of evangelism be richer? Could it be that God might have a greater heart for the lost in our community than we have yet experienced? And wouldn't we want to grow into that? We've been talking about discipleship. I mean, do we see people at MIA growing as Christians? Yes, we do. One of my favorite things as a minister, as a pastor, is when people talk to me about how their faith has come alive, about how they're learning new things about Jesus and about what it means to follow him. When you invite me in to wrestle with issues that you're facing and to pray with you and to support you as you pursue holiness and fight for purity. Are people growing as Christians? Yes. But are we satisfied? Could it be that God's heart for our becoming like Jesus is greater than anything we have experienced yet? And don't we want to grow into that? We've been talking about worship and about our experience of prayer together as a church. This series is not being about saying that we don't know how to worship and we don't know how to pray. It's not saying that there is nothing of substance in our prayer life or in our worshiping life as a church. Of course, it's not saying that. But can we grow? Can we develop? Could our encounter with God in worship and in prayer be richer, be more formative and transformative? Don't we want to grow into that? It's like in Ezekiel. We've already heard a little bit about from Ezekiel this morning, but in Ezekiel 47, there is such a brilliant picture of the river of the Spirit of life flowing out from the temple. It's flowing east, but that's another sermon, okay? But as he's flowing out of the temple, and Ezekiel is called to measure the depth of this river. And he measures it at the point where it's coming out of the temple, and it's ankle deep. And he measures off 1,000 cubits. This is a cubit, okay? 1,000 of those. And he goes out into the river, and it's knee deep. And he measures off 1,000 cubits, and it's waist deep. And he measures off 1,000 cubits. And it's this deep river that's rushing, and it's so sort of tumultuous that nobody could swim across it. And it's cascading out into the wilderness. And it's bringing life wherever it goes. And the Dead Sea becomes living and fresh. And marshes and swamps become oases of life and fruitfulness. And it happens because of this deepening, torrential flow of the life of the Spirit of God that becomes something in the end that just carries us along with it. I don't know about you, but like so often I feel like I'm ankle deep in the things of God. But when you see a picture like that, isn't that life of the Spirit worth pursuing? This series has been about asking us whether we might dare to believe that God's love for MIE is greater than anything we have experienced yet together. Whether his love for his people, whether his vision for his people is greater than anything we have yet conceived. It's about asking, is it possible that God might want to do something among us that goes beyond anything that we have hoped for or imagined? It's about asking whether we believe that God's heart for the lost and his desire to save them is greater than ours. And what would that mean for us as a church? About whether his heart for our growth is greater even than our own desire to grow as Christians. And what would that look like for us as a church? About whether his heart for our experience of him and our meeting with him and our worship and in our prayer is so much greater than anything we thought was possible. And what might that look like for our church? If you read the Bible study notes that went along with last week's service, in that I was talking about the last revival that happened on English soil. 1921. And it was here in East Anglia. It focused on the fishing ports of Lowestoft and Great Yarmouth. Listen to this as an eyewitness report of what happened in East Anglia 100 years ago. Whenever work was finished, we'd meet. Often, due to bad weather, can't imagine what he might have been talking about, the boats would be tied up and we would gather. Meetings would often go on until 3 o'clock in the morning. Strong fishermen were literally thrown to the floor under conviction until the ground around me was like a battlefield with souls crying to God for mercy. And as these weather-beaten man of the sea got up and told of how and when God had saved them. The atmosphere was charged with the presence of God. It wasn't something that was confined to church services and meetings of Christians. I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, but the Yarmouth and Gorleston Times, local newspaper of the day, on the 10th of November 1921, carried a lead article about the revival in which it said this: the entire town of Yarmouth is in the grip of the presence of God. God has come very near. Now, I can't stand here and promise that God will move like that. But when you hear something like that, doesn't something in you cry out for that? Don't we want to be going in that direction? You know, we celebrate what God is already doing in our church. We rejoice where we see the evidence of the life of the Spirit of God in our midst. We enjoy what we already do know of God and experience of God and of His love for us in Christ. But we do not allow what God has been doing and what God is doing to blind us to what God wants to do in our future. And what God is doing is inspiring us and is awakening within us a desire that we strive to develop and to grow and to mature and to cultivate our experience of God so that it is deeper and richer and more compelling. This series hasn't been an ultimatum. It's an invitation. It's not, right, I'm drawing this line in the sand and you either cross this line or I'm out of here. I wash my hands. No. That's not what I'm saying. It's not what I have been saying. And I'm not saying, okay, everything's going to change by next Sunday. You know, it's okay, we've got this all lined up and we're just going to like, boom, and impose it all on the life. No, it's about, let's take the time that we need for things to grow, for our church to grow, for us to grow. It'll take time. But let's use that time to grow in our knowledge and our experience of God. God has put a pastor's love in my heart for this church. For you. And amongst other things, what that means is my heart is for you to grow. My ambition is for you to know God more deeply and more fully than you do now. And it means that by God's grace, I want to be a part of leading you into this. I am committed to leading you into this. But I don't want to do it alone. And that's what I want to come back and talk about in a moment or two. Thank you. So in this last segment of this whole series, let's talk about leadership and involvement. There's an old Milton Jones joke that asks, what is it that helicopters and churches have in common? And it's that everyone's trying to avoid the rotas. It's better when he tells it. That's all I can say, all right? But it's only funny because it cuts so close to truth, doesn't it? It cuts so close to truth. Often churches are rota-driven. usually when churches want people to get involved, it's because we have a gap on the rota. Or there's a space on the PCC that we need to be filled, or there's a ministry team where there's a gap that's developed, and so there's a kind of urgency. And what happens is somebody gets up at the front of church and goes, "We just need anyone at all, anyone who can do this. Please come and talk to me after the service." And then after the service, we rush around tapping people on the shoulder and saying, "Oh, could you do this? Could you do this?" Until we find somebody who's too slow to say no. You know, and what happens is people go to church thinking they're just going to church, and by the end of the service, they're on the PCC, and they go home, they go, "How did that happen? What?" You know, for years, churches have been run on guilt. You know, people end up doing things because, "Well, I suppose I'd better, otherwise, you know, that project might have to close," or... Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to spend the next few years not rushing around trying to fill rotas, gaps on PCCs, on ministry teams, on working parties, committees. By God's grace, often churches work, and they work well. But I think it might be healthier for us if I spend time over the next few years praying with people who share something of the vision that I've been trying to articulate over the last few weeks. And maybe as you've been listening, you've been feeling uncomfortable. At times, maybe you felt threatened. Maybe you felt insecure. But in and amongst all of that, something within you has begun to resonate with this. As I've been talking, there's something in you that's going, that sounds real. That sounds like what I want my experience of church to be like, or at least I want that to be what my experience of church is like. And Prentice, frankly, it's great that you've caught up. Well, I want to spend the next few years with you. I want to spend the next few years investing, learning from, working out the details of this together with you. Training where that's needed. Sharing life and worship and prayer with people whose heart burns when you hear the kinds of things that I have been talking about. With people who are excited by what God might be calling us to do. Yeah, it's kind of weird. Over and over again over the last few weeks, I've just kind of got up and gone, "This is really unspectacular. There's no big silver bullet here. You know, there's no bright lights. There's no fanfare. There's no unveiling of some great sophisticated vision. There's no big revolutionary model. It's not like I've gone to a conference and come back and gone, "All right, guys, there's this thing nobody's ever done before, and if we do this, it's going to be fantastic." There's been nothing of that. You know, what have we been talking about, thinking about, praying about? evangelism, discipleship, sharing life, relationships with an agenda to encourage and inspire one another to grow in our faith and in our discipleship. We've been talking about us learning to worship, to pray. But as we've been talking about these things, some of you are thinking, you know what, this really makes sense. And you're thinking, I want to be a part of this. I want to be a part of making this happen. You might not think of yourself as a leader, but you've been listening and you've been thinking, I want to be a part of making this reality. And maybe what that meant over these last weeks is you've gone back and you've been watching the services again, listening to the talks again. You've found yourself thinking about this, going away, working it out in your head. Maybe you've wept at the possibility of what God might be calling us to. Maybe you've prayed. It's not necessarily that you have agreed with everything that I have said, but you get a sense of what I've been talking about, the trajectory that I want to set us on, and your heart is burning for this sort of pursuit of God. But maybe you're scared as well. Because, you know, this will take us into uncharted territory. Or maybe you're scared that you'll be disappointed. You know, maybe, like I was saying, 6 weeks ago, there's a danger of vision fatigue, isn't there? There's a sense of, well, we've heard visions before, and there were glossy documents. You don't even have a glossy document. How am I supposed to take this seriously? But we've heard these visions before, and we were excited, and we were committed, and a year later, actually nothing had really changed. Or the person who cast that vision had moved on, gone somewhere else. Maybe it's like, okay, Prentice, you can talk a good game, but can you deliver? You're our pastor, you're our minister, can you lead us into this? Now, that's a fair question. But my question back is, will you help me? See, God doesn't want any of us to be trying to do this on our own. He's called us together as a church, as a people, at this place and at this time. And He's called us together for a reason. And so I want to leave you with this question. You know my heart. And if it beats in time with yours, will you help me? Let me say three things as I bring this whole thing to a close. The first is, I want to go back to where I started this morning and say, look, talking about some of this stuff, I'm not saying this isn't happening. I'm not saying that we don't have these structures in place, and I'm not saying that we do not have good and wise leaders involved in the life of MIE. I'm not raising this because I think we're flatlining in this area and there's a real panic and urgency about this. No, we're not. It's because we have good structures of leadership. It is because we have good structures of ministry, and it is because we have good and wise and godly people in those structures that we're actually in a position where, as a church, we're not having to rush around reacting to crises, firefighting, plugging the gaps all the time, and we're able to take the time and the energy to have the kind of conversation that I hope we're having at the moment. That's one thing. The second thing I want to say is this. Let me say again what I've said before in this series, that this isn't how I wanted to do this. You know, we were going to have a weekend at the start of the summer, and we were going to spend 2 or 3 days together hashing all of this stuff through. The conversation, the discussion, the consultation, the working it all out was cut short because we all went into lockdown, and then we weren't able to do our weekend, and so I'm doing it now. I have been doing it now, and I have been struck again and again by the question, is this really the right time to do this? You know, there's so much uncertainty and concern and frustration and anger in the air at the moment. We're struggling to keep up with, you know, things that are going on in our society and the way that the structures of our life are changing. And there is huge fragility amongst us at the moment, just as people. And people are wrestling with huge questions. Will I still have a job at the end of this year? How do I structure life in light of guidelines and restrictions? People who are again finding themselves having to work from home and feeling the pressure of having to navigate family life around that. People are genuinely anxious about health, our own health, and the safety and the health of people that we love. In these days, there's a lot of fear about what the future might hold. And it's easy to think, I don't have the time or the energy or the inclination to deal with this. You know, everything around me is falling apart. It's all I can do to get from one end of the day to the other. This is not the time, Prentice, to be trying to cast a vision. And I've felt that very acutely. And there have been many times in the last 6 weeks when I've wrestled with the question, should I just ditch this? Should I put this on ice? Come back to it in a year's time or 2 years' time and maybe try it then. Maybe we should do something else for a few weeks. But as I've prayed about that and wrestled with that question, the conclusion that I've come to, and I want to say this as gently as I can, but maybe, just maybe, this is exactly the right time to be thinking about these things. Maybe when everything is being shaken, when so much of what has defined us and dictated how we have lived our life is suddenly crumbling around us. Maybe at a moment like this, when we are being asked deep questions about where our hope lies, questions about what our life is about, questions about what our faith means to us, and what difference does it really make? Maybe this is exactly the right kind of time. Maybe we are just about as vulnerable as we need to be before we can begin to wrestle with these questions in the way that we will need to as a church going forward. Maybe. Maybe. And the third thing that I want to say as I bring this series to a close and sit down. The third thing I want to say is yes. Yes, you can do the catechumenate if you want to. A lot of people in the last few weeks have been like, that yes, that would be really helpful. I would love to do that. Are we allowed to do it? And I'm like, yes, yes, you are. And watch this space on how that develops in the months ahead. So thank you for giving me your attention over the last few weeks. I've appreciated the hearing that I've been given. I've appreciated the feedback, the challenge, the questions, the interrogation, the support in what I've been saying. Thank you for that. It's going to take time for us to grow into this, but I'm okay with that. We'll take it at the pace that the Holy Spirit sets for us. John's going to come and lead us in church as a prayer. Lead us as a church in prayer. Thank you.